At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Coach, I mean, I thought last year was a really good season for you guys.
Yeah, it was. You know, I think that having lost what we lost the year before, you know, there was a lot of questions about the direction of how we were going to do. And when you lose a piece like Chris, you just don't know, right? You don't know. You know, it was my first year, so, you know, call it imposter syndrome. I was nervous, you know, how we were going to do without Chris. And I think from my perspective, I thought we overachieved again.
Yeah, I mean, there were so many things about that last season to me before we talk about this season that were key. I think that game, which I misquoted you, and you correct me, so I appreciate for that, right? What game? Was that the Ward game? What
was the Wilton.
The Wilton game, right? The Wilton game. Yeah. Because you mentioned about the game, about being, and I don't think it was it you said one of the best jobs you did with the best coach. How do you feel about that game? Because I want to go back and talk about that game.
Yeah, so I think, you know, when people think about the first 2 years and they think about what game is the one that you think most, everyone goes to the Ward game the first year, right?
Right.
You know, it's a semifinal game, and you go in there. And a lot of that was just momentum and just a rush, and the game just kind of took on a life of itself.
Right.
And I, not that I didn't do much, but it was, you know, I remember saying at the end of the game, like, it was just the kids that just fought, and they just did what they needed to do.
I know you're not giving yourself credit, but I want to stop. So that time I was key. But let's go ahead. That time I was key. Yeah, we talked about last time. Go ahead.
No, it was good. But this year, I thought Wilton was a very talented team, and they were big. And we had had, you know, we had kind of gone through a little bit of a tough spot there. We lost three in a row. We lost to Norwalk. We lost to St. Bernard. Then we lost to Norwalk. Then we lost to Stanford. And we were 5-4. We won a couple of games, but that was like our next big test. And being down 15 in the second quarter, and just, you know, our offense, our team, you know, we're going to talk, I'm sure, a lot about Sam this year. Was a huge focal point of he was probably averaging 24, 25 the first 10 games of the year. And then for them to kind of take him out, and for guys who typically, you know, have been role players to step up, and then that coupled with the youth that we have to come back and win that game, to me was, it really, it just said that I feel like we can accomplish almost anything. So it was incredibly rewarding. And you saw that in the interview.
Yeah, it was an incredible game, you know, from the standpoint of coming back and doing that. And last year, your postseason was really good. I mean, I thought, you know, that final at, you know, you played toe-to-toe with Ridgefield. And then, but, and that's an FCAC. But I want to talk, what was the experience like playing that Division I playoff game?
Yeah, so just to correct you, we'd beaten Ridgefield.
Right, yes, we lost to Trumbull. Trumbull. Sorry, I keep getting them confused. Ah, that's all right.
No, that's okay.
My bad, but please,
No, I thought it was a great experience for the kids. You know, we were... they were the 5 seed. We were the 12.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going into that, it was probably not the draw that we were hoping for. They were 3-time defending state champs. In my opinion, they had the best player in the state in Samson Riley. So we were going in there just, you know, having come off of a really emotional, personally and for the team, a very emotional FCAC final.
Right.
And we competed. You know, I think it was. My memory serves me correctly. I think it was 43-42 with 7 minutes to go. Salmon hit a three. I used, again, one of my run timeouts. And then they just made a play or two, and we just couldn't get a late rebound. And that went from 1-7. And then, you know, they're just a little bit, just wore us down a little bit. But it was a great experience, and I think it was great for the program to compete there. I remember the next day or 2 days later, I think all the kids, or most of the kids, went to see East Catholic play Notre Dame at Fairfield in the quarters at Ward, and it was just the atmosphere of being in D1. I thought was great for the kids.
So when you talk about the atmosphere, I mean, from what I understand, this year you guys, you know, had a chance to go back down to two, but you decided to stay at one. Can you walk us through the process of staying with the, you know, the top tier in the competition, and what that went into with you, your cap, the whole scenario? Could you kind of...
Yeah, so, you know, when we... It's been like a process for us.
Right.
You know, my first year, we went to the finals in D2, and we're super excited to be put in D1. Thought it was a real honor and badge for the program. You know, lost in the first round, and the system is what the system is, and we were back in D2. And, you know, I had talked to my captains beforehand about where they wanted to be. And, you know, they were all unanimous in favor of moving up, you know. And I think the theme was you can't win the Division I tournament unless you're in the Division I tournament.
Right.
And, you know, Division II is incredibly competitive. Windsor and West Haven were playing in the finals last year in an overtime game, and just incredible teams. And Division II is still loaded. But, you know, I think the goal is taking the next step in the program. And getting to the finals D2 first year, losing in the first round of D1 the second year, with the team and who we have coming back and just their own experience, I think it was an important decision for us to do it, and they were all on board, which made it pretty easy.
Yeah, and you know, so then you talk about this year's team. Obviously, you have you got Adam, you got Sam all coming back one more year. You got Bowman, all those guys.
Yeah.
But how is the team looking this year from your standpoint, from what you've seen so far in the fall league and coming into the season?
You know, they are, I think they are tired of losing runner-up games. And they have been incredibly locked in. You know, I was watching them at a shoot-around last night, and they're just in the gym, and they're just sitting there, and they're just so locked into what it is that they're doing. But, you know, I think they're ready to take the next step. This is the first year where I feel like we have some expectations. My first year was my first year, right?
Right.
And then last year, again, as I articulated before, we lost a lot of seniors, and it was unsure, you know, how deep we were going to be or how we were going to be able to compete. And, again, I think that we exceeded expectations. This year, the expectations are high. And, you know, that can put pressure on them, it can put pressure on me, it can put pressure on the program. But we're just, you know, we're going to break the season down into quarters, and we're going to attack each quarter, and but they're locked in, they seem ready to go.
And are you still doing there's a tournament that you guys did last year, right? This Christmas time.
Yep.
You're doing that as well, because you're kind of going through the whole thing in the season as well.
Yeah, we have the Christmas tournament, and then we have the SAC regular season, so right. We have four out of conference games before the holiday. Then we start FCAC. We have another out of season, out of conference game with St. Bernard up there in the middle of our year, and then we go into hopefully the tournament. But you know, I'm trying to break the season up into like four game tournaments, and let's play every four games. You know, again, with expectations high, I just want to. You can't win the FCACs until you get to the game.
Right. That's
and if we can learn how to continually improve our tournament play. Hopefully we can get it, you know, we can practice and get prepared for what we need to do.
And the roster this year, you know, I kind of want to ask about individual players.
Yeah.
How is Sam looking for this year?
You know, he's ready to go. You know, he is, in my opinion, a pretty obvious, you know, preseason player of the year candidate. You know, there's some great guards, TJ Wright and at St. Joe's, and you know, Ryan Johnson and Trumbull and Sean Wilson and Trumbull. There are some really good players that are coming back. But, you know, I'd really put Sam up against any of them in regards to the way he's worked over the last 6 months, 7 months. I mean, he is playing. He had a great fall. And, you know, we had a great fall, but it was a big contributor to that. And forget the play of Sam, like the leadership of Sam is taken to the next step. Sam is doing a great job, like instilling our core values and really thinking about accountability as being one of them, and holding not only himself but his teammates as accountable as I could ever imagine holding them.
Because he was thrown in as a freshman in a varsity in that ward game. I mean, you know, in the whole season. So he's been around a lot. But it takes a lot to kind of find your guest leadership style.
Yeah.
Right, I mean, and I think he's coming in that really well. Aside from him, you got Adam, you got Bowman, you got how is the supporting cast looking for this year?
Yeah, so I think you know you go to Udell next. you know, he is obviously a Division I athlete, you know, going to my alma mater and playing lacrosse there. Yeah. I'm proud of him. But again, you know, he's won two state championships and an FCAC in lacrosse the last couple of years, and I get the sense that he wants to finish his resume with something special in hopes, which might make it the most decorated high school career that I've seen around these parts in a while. But, you know, his athleticism is off the charts. His decision-making is off the charts. Again, you know, this is going to be him as a two-year captain and, you know, continuing to hold the rest of the captains and the rest of the team accountable. Okay. So, you know, incredibly excited to watch him grow. And he's, to be honest with you, in my opinion, I'm not sure there's a better defender in the state. And I told him that the other day. And he's just, you know, he's looking to continue moving forward. And then you got Mason. You know, Mace had a really great last quarter half of the season. I thought he was key to our success in the FCACs, and especially had a great final and had a great state game against East Catholic. Yeah. He's another Division I athlete, just committed to going to play baseball at Seton Hall. And so I've got guys that are competing that, you know, have incredible mental toughness. I really talked to like the three of them the other day about I just can't believe how tough they are mentally, you know, just watching them in the fall and watching them, you know, do what they do now. They just have this kind of refuse to lose mentality around it. Again, you know, it's all on paper right now, but I'm liking what I see. And then the fourth captain is Bowman,
right?
Charlie is probably somebody, you know, who's worked on basketball. Came up as a varsity player as a sophomore. You know, was on the bench for that Ward game. Last year was kind of our sixth, seventh man, and got injured early in the season, which I thought set him back a little bit. But Charlie, again, also had a great fall. Athletic, you know, cares, has been working really hard on developing both his offense and his defense, and the chemistry between the four of them is working great right now.
Yeah, your caps are great. And I do want to ask you about a couple of the things on the roster. I mean, we know Loman's going to be good. We know Hatcher's going to be good. I know Jacob, all those guys. But there's a couple of things. First is I think you're getting a transfer this year from Ward.
We are.
How did that come about, and how do you expect that him to impact, Corrigan to impact the team this year?
Yeah, Maddie is he's a great kid. Mm-hmm. First and foremost, he's a great kid. You know, his mom works at Staples,
right.
And you know, he is, you know, Staples is a great public high school,
yeah,
right. And so having an opportunity to you know, to finish your high school at Staples is something that I think was incredibly important to Maddie and his family. The thing you got to be careful about is, you know, you have kids that have been working in our system or have been part of our program, and you have someone who comes in new, and that can create tension. Right. And the one thing that we've focused on is being transparent about it, understanding that it's there, understanding that, you know, we're the sum of the parts is greater than each individual part.
Right.
And just making sure that that we're going to go as far as the collaborative team culture that we have. So he's adjusted well. The kids love him. Again, I'd be lying if there wasn't, you know, some concern preseason about where that makes his role versus their role, and that's all understandable, right? I'd have that same concern about them.
So it's a good problem to have good players.
Yes, it is. It's a great problem to have, but at the same time, it comes with some challenges.
Yeah.
And those challenges are incredibly important. And I'm always a firm believer that, like, you're talented enough to win five games. You're not talented enough to lose five games, and then it's about those middle 10, right? And that 10 is about culture and about commitment to one another, working hard and supporting your teammates. So that's where kind of my focus has been.
And you also have another player that I think was not on your roster for the last couple of years as a senior coming up now. And he's a big guy. I'm drawing a blank on his name right now.
Yeah, so we have a couple seniors
so
right now.
My whole point with that is like how kids are just coming back to the program and what you're doing. Is that, can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, winning, we won. You know, we've won in the last couple of years, and I think that the kids and the community and the school have and the staff have done a good job, hopefully creating a good experience for the kids. And they're coming back a little bit, we're going to see how it all plays itself out. But great. I'm flattered that they're interested in trying out again. Again, it comes down to fitting in their roles,
right,
and making sure that everyone really understands what their role is. But it, as you said, it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, it's just like there's a lot, like I said, we're around the school, we're talking to people, and there's a lot of excitement around it.
Yeah.
And you can kind of see that, kids that maybe, it's like you said, when you win, you kind of attract that, where people are like, I want to be part of this thing because it's really good. And that's going to lead me into my next question, is where I saw a video where you were talking, I believe, where was it the Powell parents or something like that?
Yeah.
You were talking about the word stents.
Yeah.
And I've seen that a lot on the shirts and things like that.
Yeah.
But I don't think I ever really got it until I saw you do that. So I want you to, if you could, please take a minute and kind of talk about what that word means and what it stands for and how the program is built around that word.
Yeah, so, when I was applying for the job, I was, just thinking about certain things of how I wanted to, if I were to get it, how I were to, instill our culture. And, thinking about my own experiences, simplifying everything into a few rules that we only hold them accountable to those few rules is kind of how I thought about it. Having your core values. Now, my sons make fun of me about stance because it could appear to be somewhat corny in regards to what it, the whole idea of it, and mm-hmm. break every huddle with it, and it's on the back of their jerseys. And,
right.
We're coaching the 8th grade team this year, or my varsity staff is, and it's on the back of their jerseys. But it has two main meanings. It has a core values meaning, and it's an acronym for, spirit, transparency, accountability, noise. We want a loud gym. A quiet gym is a losing gym. Communication, right, and conditioning, and then everyone's equal. So equality, making sure that, I should say everyone's not equal, but that everyone's valued equally.
Yeah.
And that is something that we always talk about from a core value perspective. From a basketball perspective, it is very distinct 6 meanings that we talk about before, and it goes on the board. I wrote the same 6 words on the board or same ideas on the board before every single game. I talk to them when I'm texting them or when I'm communicating with them during the off season. Talks about S, which is shot selection. We take good shots. T, transition. We want to run, but we also want to make sure that we get back on defense. A, which is assist to score, meaning we share it down here in Westport, right? We share the basketball, yeah. And it's very important that we do that. And, there was a very famous quote by Pat Riley who once said, there's no rebounds, no rings. So no rebounds. So we have been undersized at times with the exception of Chris, so we got to make sure we rebound the basketball. C is charges. Everyone knows that,
Nick was a master of that last year, just diving all over the floor, like getting hit.
Nick was. Ethan Cooper the year before. Yep. Udell does a great job of taking charges. We're getting it to be more culture. And then E, we play off of 2 feet, so execute off of 2. So those 6 phrases, words go on the board. We talk about those things. We grade ourselves on those things. And so far, it's been keys to success. So we talk about stance games. Did we have a stance practice? Is this a stance culture? They bought into it, which is great. And it honestly simplifies. It makes my life a lot more organized because I'm not. My head doesn't go into 17 different places trying to think about, okay, why didn't this work today, or why didn't that work today, or what we need to do in order to improve. I really. My staff and I sit down. We say, okay, were we able to accomplish what we try to accomplish with those 6 things? And most of the time, if we have, we won. If we haven't, we've lost.
Yeah, and the kids might say it's corny, but I have a good experience with that. I love what you're doing because, a lot of stuff we do prep zone, I always end with be kind, be positive, things like that. And the other day, I think it was Adam from football said that there's a kid, and I'm not gonna give him away, but he said he's in college right now, and he still thinks about those 3 words because he heard it so much that it just sticks with you. It becomes second nature. It becomes part of who you are. So having those core values is important to a program.
I think there's things that I think about. I really attribute it to a lot of the success we've had so far. And it's them buying into it, us kind of thinking about and coming up with those words. But it's it has simplified the goal and the mission. And I agree with you. It's something that they I've repeated so many times that those are the things that we value.
Yep.
And
you know, hey, if you stand for well. If you stand for everything, you stand for nothing. So you got to stand for something. So I love that.
We've worked with it. Yeah. Thanks.
And you know, and just picking back off that, I really feel like you're kind of like the basketball is kind of becoming a program bigger than just Staples as you're working in. Like I said, I saw the video. I see Powell does a lot of stuff. In your last 2 years here, what do you think has really worked, and what are you looking to improve on the integration of the younger kids with the high school kids?
Yeah, so I think that we have done a really good job of implementing these core values into the high school, and kind of establishing that foundation at Staples about what we want, what we're looking to be, the crowds, the junkyard, everything that
which I love the junkyard word, by the way. I use it all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's been something that has, I think, improved the culture. Kyle did a great job, but we've just taken it to the next step of culture at, you know, at basketball at Staples. The thing I want to improve on is now bringing that down into the youth. You know, as I mentioned before, we are coaching, the four of us on my varsity / JV staff are coaching the eighth graders. You know, Coach Pickens is the director of coaching at for the boys at the youth level. So bringing our philosophy to the youth, I think, is where we just want to make sure that we're continuing. We just ran a practice on Monday night, and I said to Pick at the end of the practice, I'm like, it was like we just ran a varsity practice. The kids, the drills that we do, the methodology, the comments, the enthusiasm, the energy, was great, and I think it will hopefully just continue to set them up for successes and consistency as we move forward, because now it's about consistency.
Right.
You know, the thing I was so admirable or I admire about Coach McClellan at Ridgefield is you drive to get to the top. You have drive to get to the top, but your ability to stay at the top for as long as you had is really hard. It's really, really hard, and I think it's even harder than getting there at times. So if we can implement and integrate what we're doing there and it works in the youth, and then we just get better and we get consistent, then I think we really got a program.
Yeah, because we're not a choice school, right? I mean, you're going to get the players that come from the program, so the earlier you start work with them and implement those values, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah.
And also, I think it makes the program reachable. Right, or maybe like relatable, right? So you're not just sitting on this high horse waiting for people to come in. You're kind of there day to day with these people, and that's something.
Yeah, it's you know, we've gotten to know them better, right? It's always a challenge because basketball's one of the few sports at Staples that's a pretty decent sized cut sport, right? So you gotta it's hard. You're building relationships with kids, and if you have six a class.
It's a good point. I don't know. Yeah.
If you get six a class by the time you're done, you know, that's a lot, right? So, but to me, it's not about whether you're playing at 7 o'clock or at 5:15 or at 4 o'clock at the high school. You know, when you're a young youth, it's about teaching them the values of what good basketball looks like and what good chemistry looks like and what good culture looks like. And then it's up to them to kind of take it from there.
And from a standpoint of coming into this year, and I always like to talk about, you know, what's successful here, sucks for you then. I think you touched on that. You said, so you go to the Division II final, you play a Division I round. Are you looking this year as like, are you, you know, is this like advancing that tournament or just being more competitive? How are you handling this year versus last year now, your second year in Division I?
Yeah, I mean, you know, my goal every single year we talked about, like, you know, we're going to break this season down into small parts,
right,
and kind of see how we go. You know, the first goal that we had was to have a successful fall, and we did.
You won the tournament, successful tournament, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so we had some success in the fall, and now we're focused on the Christmas tournament and leading up to that Christmas tournament. We're at Pomparag, and then obviously getting through the FCX season and hopefully qualifying for the playoffs. and then going into state. You know, I think we can play with anybody in the state. I do. I saw it this fall. I see it in the work ethic with the kids. You know, we showed, I think we proved to ourselves that even losing at East Catholic last year in a tough environment, that we can compete. We have to fine-tune some things and tweak them and get better and continue to, you know, to up the level of coaching and accountability and all the things that we talked about with Stance, but I'm not here to lose.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect you to beat. I think anybody is, right? I remember having Adam earlier this year, and he said that, you know, somebody from the administration came to him and said, if you go 7-3, he goes, I'm not going 7-3. I'm winning as much as I can, right? Yeah. You have to want to win these games, bottom line. That's how you go into it.
Yeah, you do, but you also, you can't win these games on November 20th.
Right.
You know, you can't win them on November 20th. You know, it was a war to get to where we were at Trumbull, you know, versus Trumbull last year, and the ups and downs of the Jaylen Brown 50 and the tough loss at Stanford, and then Trumbull coming in and beating us, and then us, you know, having some good quality wins, a buzzer beater basically at St. Joe's. Like, it's a process, and, you know, and with the success that we've had and with some of the returners, expectations, as I mentioned, are high, and my goal here is really to shorten the time horizon, right? You can get very anxious and feel a lot of pressure thinking about March 16th at Mohegan Sun. So I'm confident in our group. They are they're a fun team to coach. They now have had me for 2 years, so I think they understand the system and understand those core values and basketball values more. But we got work to do.
Yeah. In these 2 years, what has maybe like the biggest lesson, was the biggest surprise you've had in coaching this high school now for 2 years?
The biggest lesson that I think that I've learned is that the kids are way smarter than I thought I'd give them credit for. The kids get it. They know when you're not being authentic. They know when you're piecemealing it together. They know when you are, they get it, right? And you're not going to fool them. So empowering them, right? We talk about this year, talk about last year too, but becoming more player-led and teaching them how to be player-led and their ability to pick that up and adjust to that. Again, they've run these captain's practices without me there, and they've just been, I've gotten texts from them, they've been phenomenal. So that's been, you think you have to really coach them, you just have to direct them. If you direct them in the right way with a lot of enthusiasm, you know, they'll lead themselves.
Yeah, and it's interesting you said that, because I almost feel, I do feel like being a high school coach, you're not like forming players. They already have their skills. They come in, they're kind of ready basketball players. So you're working on fundamentals and teaching them X's and O's to kind of your style. But, you know, is there a medium there to where, you know, you still want to input your fundamentals in them, or are you just really kind of being a motivator and kind of guiding them through games? How do you manage that, those two aspects of someone like a Sam or Adam that, you know, that you got Division I athletes in your squad. You mentioned you got 2 or 3, 4 of them. How do you manage, ego is not the right word, but all those, like, you know, strong male athletes into that?
Sam and Adam, Mason, I'll use those three, Bowman. You know, we have a lot of other kids too, Lohman, Heyer, you know, they're Corrigan. I mean, they are better basketball players than I ever was, ever. And that's something I've been very careful about, which is kind of why there's two things that I focus on with them always. We always focus on those six things. From an X's and O's perspective, from an inside the lines development perspective, it's about, okay, Sam, was that a good shot or wasn't that a good shot? Adam, could you have taken the charge there? Mace, are we rebounding the basketball? Bo, are we running to the rim the way we need to run to the rim? Those things are the X's and O's, right? I'm not necessarily focusing on Sam's hand angle when he's shooting the basketball. But the other thing that I think that we bring to the table focus a lot on is the mental piece of it, and that is, in my opinion, more valuable than focusing on the X's and O's. Like, these, I can look at these kids and I can tell how, what kind of experiences or play they're going to have from little things. And I'll use Jake, my son, for example, just because it hits home for me. I can tell whether Jake's going to have a good at-bat from the way he walks from the on-deck circle to the plate. Just, it doesn't even matter who he's facing. It's just his body language. Same thing with my basketball players. Like, I can tell by the way that they're huddling whether they're going to come out and win that game to 10 or they're going to lose that game to 10. So we focus a lot on positivity and culture and mental work and confidence and valuing everybody. Not everyone's equal, but valuing right. everybody equally and making sure that their role is appreciated.
Yeah, and that's an interesting because it's like, you know, I'm just going to pick back on that. You said, you know, well, I can tell, you know, if they're going to have a good game or not based on these things. So how do you correct that? If you know off the bat, you come in and you're saying, well, you know, they don't look sharp today. So what do you do differently to kind of maybe don't have that outcome that you think you're going to have?
A lot of it, like, I'm not a miracle worker in regards to the, in regards to correcting it, but I think a lot of it is just pointing it out.
I see.
A lot of it's just pointing it out. Like, they're smart enough to know that they need to fix it or they get it. A lot of it's just looking in the eye and being like, we're not here right now, right? I'm not qualified, you know, I don't have the skill set to fix them in the given moment, but they do. They do. They know what good looks like and what good doesn't look like from a mental perspective. So if we're transparent about what we're seeing, hey, you know, this guy just threw you a great pass, Sam. Adam just hit you on the button for a three. Why did you not go over and give him a high five? Like, why are we running back on defense and not acknowledging the fact that he did that? Again, those two are tight, so that's not
right,
I'm
right.
just using it as an example. But it's about just acknowledging, like, living in the present and acknowledging, like, the feeling that's going on in that given moment with that, right? Mm-hmm. And not shying away from it, not being afraid to say, Mace, like, you just missed it because you're not right here right now, you know? And, you know, that's something that all of them struggle with. All of them struggle with. We all do, right? And that's something that we talk about. Hopefully they learn from each other, and hopefully they understand that they need to pick each other up in regards to that mental aspect. If they can do that, yeah, it's all good.
Does that happen because, and listen, I love that, you know, we have so many athletes play multiple sports, right? And right now, we said it just a minute ago,
yeah.
You have, you know, kids, Adam's going to play lacrosse in school, you know, Mason's going to pitch,
yeah.
You know, and then you probably have Sam who's going to play basketball.
Yeah.
But do you treat them differently, you know, because maybe basketball isn't their quote-unquote main sport? And how do you see that playing into as a positive or negative to the program?
So it's just understanding what their strengths and weaknesses are. You know, I'm not sure I've met a kid who's as much a competitor as Udell. Like, he just competes from the time I watch him, he was on the soccer field at 5 years old. Like,
I remember getting beat by him a lot.
He just competes. Yeah. Mason getting the final out in the state semifinal game against Ward, you know, when being called upon. You know, just watching guys, you know, Austin Heyer, who we haven't even mentioned, who's a sophomore who's, you know, had a great fall and I think is going to really be a good contributor for us this winter. I'm sure I'm missing in kids, but it's about finding their strengths, understanding what they do well, and really putting a point of emphasis on making sure that it's not, okay, we'll fix this, right? It's Udell has got his strengths and he has his weaknesses. Sam has his strengths and his weaknesses. Mason, Bowman, Corrigan, they all have their strengths and their weaknesses. Gukier, whoever it is. But it's really figuring out a way to harp on their strengths and maximizing their strengths. And then, you know, someone else, hopefully their strengths balance to somebody else's weaknesses and it works well.
Yeah, it seems to be working out well. And then if you look at, you know, everything that's happened on this last couple of years going into this season,
yeah.
You said that, you know, you feel some pressure coming here in year three, you know, because it's kind of like you had some time now. Last year I asked, you know, what is a successful season? We went through that, and I don't want to ask that again, but I want to say the identity this year. Last year when we talked, you talked a lot about defense.
Yep.
How your defense is going to generate the offense. I remember we talked a lot about that. Is this year's team going to be similar like that, or are you going to take a little bit of a different identity? Or is the defense in the office is something that's from you, or is it from the team?
Yeah. You know, I've thought about that question a lot over the last 3 months preparing for the season. And it's not going to change. It's not going to change. Our best play is getting a stop defensively. It's, you know, when you're dealing with, I don't really care if you're dealing with all basketball only players or you're dealing with multi-sport athletes. Like, it just separates you the way you defend and your commitment to defending. So, and then the other big piece of it, which, you know, always concerns me, is our ability to rebound the basketball. Those two things. Yes, do I think we have some returners coming back, or we have more returners this year? We have 11 returners coming back. Last year we had 7 returners coming back. The year before we had 12 or 10. But nothing's really changed. Our ability to defend, get stops, and then take advantage of misses and stops by completing a defensive possession with a rebound and then going is what we're going to harp on.
I guess one last one before we move on to the next subject is that we talked about the idea of how the program's growing, how people want to be here more and more and more. What are you looking at from a coach to a player perspective, of someone who's like, you know, maybe someone who's on your squad right now and wants to get more playing time, or someone who's not on the squad is going to try out in the next few weeks to be here? What are you as a coach looking for in players to be part of this program?
Yeah, so I think, you know, we've gone through, this will be our third tryout. And the thing that we always talk about in our coach's room and that I try to articulate, it's not necessarily the best 20 to 24, 18 to 22 kids that we take, the most talented kids. It's, again, it goes back to who's going to fit in their role, right? So Andy Cerrito is a prime example of that last year. And he was a senior who came back to I don't think he even played a minute of high school basketball, maybe he did as a freshman, and then came back as a senior and tried out. But Andy was a glue guy, culture guy. He was a senior. He had experience. He had gained the respect of some of our better underclassmen and was an absolute, like, incredible, impeccable leader for what we needed. And when Andy spoke, people listened. So was Andy the most talented basketball player at Staples? You know, no, but we wouldn't have accomplished what we accomplished if it wasn't for Andy Cerrito. So it's a puzzle, Steve.
I see.
It's a puzzle, and you're trying to put that puzzle together. You know, there's a lot of thought around underclassmen versus upperclassmen and continuing to develop people, or do you need, you know, are they ready to compete in the gym with some? I need a quadratic equation to figure out how to do
it's
not easy.
I always feel like, you know, at all sports, at all levels of high school, it's like you always look for someone to replace someone you got playing right now, right? Yeah. It's tricky because you're putting these teams together where you're like, okay, well, next year they're not going to be here. How do I replace them, right? So you're always thinking like that.
Yeah, it's always, you know, you want – I'll never forget, you know, the way Adam was going after, and Sam was, both Adam and Sam going after Rothy and Charlie's role when they were sophomores and freshmen. Like, there's just a hunger that you can't replicate when you're an upperclassman, they force you, the upperclassmen, to compete, and that, I thought, brought the best out of Charlie and Gavin in that year. So, it's a balance, and you very rarely you get it completely right, but you try.
Yeah, but listen, anything that happens, I mean, you know, you guys get the big crowds. The junkyard is full. It's so much fun. We had some great games last year, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun this year as well. I can't wait for it.
Yeah. You know, I think the crowd, a lot has to do with the senior class. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a kid in the
Good
senior
point,
class,
yeah.
which is helpful, and I just ask everyone to come. You know, it's about the community. It's about getting together on, you know, two nights a week, and, you know, it's nice because they're 90-minute games, and
yeah,
you can just be loud and have fun and hopefully go see a good product.
Yeah.
So we're excited about it.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I do want to do some quick hits with you here. We've done some of them, but I got some different ones for you, so people are getting to know Gocher a lot. So what's your biggest pet peeve?
My biggest pet peeve is probably not like apathy a little bit. You know, I struggle with apathy, you know, and not that I think lazy is a tricky word, because there's a lot behind laziness, mm-hmm. but just not fear of failure and not giving it your all because you have fear of failure. And that, I think, leads to apathy, and that to me is a pet peeve of mine. Yeah.
That's a big insight of how to make that team.
That and challenge and deep challenge twos. That's uh-huh. another big pet peeve of mine. When we start shooting challenge twos from inside the 3-point line, I start to lose my mind a little bit.
All right. Do you have any favorite holiday traditions or favorite holiday moments?
So I'm looking forward to Thanksgiving. We hosted Thanksgiving. We did our house and hosted Thanksgiving last year. We're actually going to Boston this year. So Thanksgiving's a big holiday in my family. So I'm super excited about it.
Awesome. When you're growing up in school, what's your favorite subject? I don't think I ever asked you that.
I was a math guy. Yeah, okay. I was a math guy. Numbers kind of came easy to me. You know, I think I always wanted to be a high school statistics teacher.
High school statistics teacher. I like that.
I did. But, you know, life path took me in a different direction. Yeah. But yeah, I was just numbers guy.
So, you like statistics. That's what you're thinking. I love it, yeah. too. I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I did it great. They review a lot of stuff.
I'm sorry?
They review a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
they do. They really do.
They do reveal a lot of stuff.
So, what's your favorite board game or video game?
So, my kids will have. I'm not a video game guy at all. I think growing up, I think it was probably, Mario Brothers or something like that, or Kaboom. I remember playing Atari Kaboom when I was younger.
I remember Atari very well. I loved Atari. Yeah, Kaboom was a good game.
Kaboom was fun.
Yeah, because Atari had just a joystick. Odyssey was the one before that had like the keyboard, but Atari was the good one. Yeah,
Atari was fun. And then I just remember, like, when I was younger, I have childhood memories of playing Chutes and Ladders. When I was growing up and being in competition with my parents or my siblings about just, you know, the slide and the ladder and everything.
Play that so much. It's a great game, isn't it? It's very simple, but it drives to the point.
Simple.
Yeah.
Very simple.
What's your first concert you ever attended?
I think it was Crosby, Stills, and Nash in my junior year of high school. We saw CSN in the county center in Westchester and White Plains, where actually they have like the Westchester Final Four tournament there. And the goal was, as a high school player, was always to get to the county center. But I remember going to see Crosby, Stills, and Nash. It might have been in Young, too, but Crosby, Stills, and Nash in the county center, and I think when I was a sophomore, junior in high school.
Love that. So picking off from music, do you have a go-to karaoke song?
Yeah, so I remember going back, like, Thanksgivings to... after I graduated from high school and going back to like a local bar in Chappaqua. I grew up in Chappaqua. And I remember, for some reason, it was late, I guess I graduated in 95, so it was like mid-90s. And like to end the night in that bar back then, they used to sing Sweet Caroline. So I kind of got into this tradition of singing Sweet Caroline. I sung it all my friends, karaoke at all my friends' weddings. And now it's now taking on its own thing with the Red Sox and now almost everywhere. But if you talk to my college friends, I think you'll say that I did. I was karaokeing Sweet Caroline before most people were.
Oh, can you sing that without reading the words? Do you know all the lyrics to it? Probably.
I do. I probably put me on the spot right now, but I know the lyrics.
Because, it seems like every part you go to, at some point people get play that song, right?
Yeah.
And you kind of muffle through everything, but then you just... The main line you hit.
Yeah, you do. No, I know the lyrics. Don't put me on the spot now. I've gotten to the point where I've done that enough times.
Love that.
And it's fun because it's such a great energy boost for the party.
Oh, God, yeah.
So,
and now there's remixes of it. I mean, there's all kinds of things for it out there.
Yeah.
What's your game day superstition habit? Do you have one?
I do. I run before. I run and I work out before games. Before I come to the school. And then I leave my work and I have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich before I come to the school.
Every game. Peanut butter and jelly.
Every single game has been peanut butter and jelly.
Love that.
Yeah, it settles my stomach. You know,
just brings you back to college days, right?
It works. I'm very superstitious about game days. You know, what I wear, what shoes I wear.
Remember last year, because you were wearing the hoodies, and people were like, yeah, where do I buy the hoodies? Like, I would get questions on our channel about, does he have a line? Where does he buy them? So we got to get some of that stuff out to everyone.
We will.
That's fun.
We will.
What's your favorite book or favorite author?
My favorite book. You know, it's funny. My wife and I started watching the Alex Cross show, which is on TV. I think it's on Netflix right now. Alex Cross was a character from James Patterson.
Okay, yeah, I know Patterson well.
James Patterson. Yeah. So I remember reading the James Patterson books when I was younger. And Alex Cross, who was a detective, and John Sampson was his partner, those books. So Lauren and I started watching the Alex Cross stuff. So that's what...
I got to see that, because I know those characters. I did not know there was a Netflix show about it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's Netflix. I think it's Netflix. Okay. I'm trying to think of the other, you know, other classics. Yeah, I mean, I, you know, a lot of time now I'm reading a lot of, like, just autobiographies and nonfiction stuff about coaches or about, you know, there's this great book that I just read recently called The Go-Giver. There's some stuff, good stuff out there that I'm reading. A lot of the stuff to help with leadership here at either my job or what I'm doing.
Yeah, well, that's amazing. What's the best basketball moment you've ever witnessed?
The best, I'm sorry?
Basketball moment you've ever witnessed.
The best basketball moment I've ever witnessed. Well, I'd say there's probably two that I can remember. The best basketball moment in my life was Uzdel Steele against Ward. It was just not knowing what was going to happen in that game, and for him to make that play at that moment. As a sophomore, and just the IQ that was necessary to make that play and just bring us back after the roller coaster of that game is a moment. I'm just not sure how I can top that. I think the second was, I was a freshman at Michigan, and Duke had come in my freshman year to play the Fab Five, and they were probably 17 or 18 in the country. Michigan was. Duke was number one team, and that was the Grant Hill, Bobby Hurley, and Christian Laettner team. And we were just a bunch of freshmen, and we ended up losing in overtime that game. Weber missed like a 60-foot hit the front rim, buzzer beater in regulation, and then we lost in overtime. But Chrysler Arena that day was the loudest live event I've ever been to at a basketball game. So those two events.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And then we asked pregame, and what's your way to go to your go to relax after the game? What do you guys do?
Yeah. So the staff usually goes out and, you know, has a drink or two, just to, you know, I love talking about what else happened in the conference that night. I love talking about, you know, the game with them. You know, the emotions and up and down. Yeah. I have a great staff. Steve, I'm so lucky and fortunate to have Chris and Joe and Sully and Corey on the freshman. Like, they're like best friends for me. You know, we spend a lot of time together. Mm-hmm. You know, when you live and you coach in a town, sometimes you lose friends. But those guys have been so great, and just spending time with them at the end of the game, dissecting what we did right, what we did wrong, having a few laughs. I just can't wait. I'm looking forward to 2 weeks. I can't wait to spend the time with them over the next 3 months.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's really cool. And then we'll end with this. What's the best advice you've ever received?
The best advice I ever received. So my father, as you know, he passed the night of the FCAC final.
Yes, I remember.
And he always used to say to me that the mettle of a man is determined when things are not going well versus when things are going well. And that has stuck with me, you know, it stuck with me that night when unfortunately we didn't get it done. And it stuck with me through all of what life is about, right? Life is easier when it's great, and the basketball team is easier to manage when we're winning and things are going well and everyone's happy. And then how we all respond, myself, the staff, the parents, the kids, the school, to when things are not necessarily going well, whatever sport or whatever the circumstances are, is something that I'll never forget my father telling me.
It's amazing. Yeah, that was quite a game. An emotional game from all standpoint. I remember that after the game, I actually drove to Boston for a volleyball tournament.
Oh, you did?
I did. So it's like, it's like you go back and these things kind of stick with you, right? That was one of those days. And I mean, I'm sure the Ward game, like you said, the Fab Five, I mean, all this stuff just kind of sticks with it, becomes part of who you are.
And yeah, that night was obviously a tough night, but it was, I can't tell you how impressed I was about the way that our kids responded, you know. And we were up, you know, they came out and they were up 22-10, I think, and then we're up 8 at halftime, and they knew that I wasn't there that night. They just knew it. I was looking through them, and I got great help from my staff. They battled and they fought, and you know, we were just a player too short here, but I'll never forget that. And then, you know, 3 days later, for all of them to walk into my dad's funeral service was just, I kind of just lost it.
It's, you know, my dad used to say that you just have to show up and help the moment that people need. Can't do it afterwards, right? I mean, that's the moment that you needed them and they showed up, and
it's asking a lot though from, you know, 15 to 18 year olds.
Yeah.
You know, like I was contemplating whether to tell them or not to tell them before the game, and I just, I'm transparent, and I wouldn't be living up to my core values as Stance in the T if I wasn't transparent with them in that time. And they were great. They got it. You know, again, the assistants cleaned up my mess a little bit, and they just went out and balled that night. And you know, they were champions. I don't care what the score said; they were champions that night.
Agree. And you know, I remember from Madison Point, you know, we didn't do a post game. I just kind of, you know, said something you don't remember, but like I remember walking through the players right, and I made sure I talked to each of them. And you could see that they were kind of like, they were disappointed in the game, but they almost kind of like they felt like they let you down. I kind of got a sense of that more than themselves, right? And it's like, and it was really emotional, but I loved everything I saw about the team that game, no doubt.
Yeah, you know, it was, they didn't let me down.
I know they didn't, but I mean, but yeah, it's
they,
like.
Let's just clarify that. They were awesome that night.
Yeah, they were.
You know, and, you know, again, I feel like there were a couple things that didn't go our way late. And that happens. It's basketball, but you know, losing is sometimes a really, really great thing. You know, I think it was, you know, in 2004 when the Red Sox won. Like, the losing made the winning so much better. You know, being a Michigan fan, watching that game 3 years ago when we finally beat Ohio State after 12 years, like, it was euphoria, right? So. Again, you know, I think they have some drive and some, they have a little bit of a chip from what's happened in some of these championship games recently, but we got to break it down into small sections. And see what
I can't wait for this year. I think it's going to be phenomenal. You know, we'll get the junkyard going again.
I hope so.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. We'll be around, Coach. Again, I want to thank you not only for today, but you guys are such a, you know, a big part of what we do at Prep Zone. You guys are always willing to do a post-game interviews and things like that, so I really appreciate it, all that stuff that you guys do.
And
thank
Steve,
you.
Steve, listen, thank you for what you do. You know, the kids, we've talked about this offline and in these podcasts, but the kids love you.
I appreciate I love them.
They love you. No, they do, and you can tell where it comes from. It's 100% for them, and the school's lucky to have you. They really are.
Well, I appreciate it, and same with you. You guys have been doing you're building something really special here. We'll be together, hopefully, a lot more years.
I hope so. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks again, Coach.